Chapter 2, please. 2 Peter chapter 2. And if you are 3 years old through the third grade and would like to go to our junior church program this morning, let me ask you to make your way to the back of the auditorium and our workers will meet you there. To mention earlier, Helen Lake is in the hospital again, and so continue to pray for her. I talked to Joyce again this morning. She's wanting to come home now, so that's a good sign, but continue to pray for her. And then Chrissy's grandfather as well, he's home, but both of them have an incurable illness. It's called age. And you just can't reverse it, and the body just really struggles to continue on. And so pray for both of them as you think of that. I wanted to thank you as well for your kindness to Christy and me last weekend. That was truly a shock, and really enjoyed that. And I appreciate you taking the time to stay for lunch and to arrange all of that. And many of you were very kind in giving some gifts, which we certainly did not expect. And I understand that there was a great letter that went out that said, gifts are not optional. Those are some good friends to have when you're having a letter sent out. I don't know if any of you even noticed there. I know some of you must have noticed because I think something else went out. But I think Carol told me she had typed, gifts are optional, and then gifts are not expected. And then when she went to change it, she didn't get all the words erased. So it went out, gifts are not optional. I thought that was kind of neat. I'm going to remember that one. She's going to hear about that for a long time. That's good. Yeah, but we certainly do appreciate all you did, and just thoroughly enjoyed the day, and have a silver platter. I meant to put it up in the or in the foyer, and I'll do that. Put it out there just so all of you didn't see it. It's engraved. It's really nice, and Christy hasn't let me use it out in the garage for tools yet, but I'm still working on that. She's gone this week, so you know, maybe if I can find it, I'll do that. But we did enjoy it, and we look forward to what the Lord will continue to do with us. And He's been so kind in our marriage and in our family, and just giving us the place here and the people that we know. Now, we're in 2 Peter chapter 2, but if you're one who's been here, you're thinking, well, wait, we're in the wrong place, because we're going through Genesis, and we are still doing that. This is just going to launch us from the New Testament back into an Old Testament story that you're pretty familiar with. Let me mention something else as well, and that is that I've talked about on Wednesday night the fact that our Wednesday night study will collide and work in collaboration with what we're doing here on Sunday morning. And so as we do those two things, we are at a place where... Did I lose sound here, or am I... Okay, maybe my hearing's going bad. Okay. We come to the place where these two things begin to work together, and they begin to really funnel into one particular point that I wanted to drive home to you, and that is that a Christian has to be very careful, not just for a day or two, but you have to be careful in your life about the decisions that you make. Because while we make decisions that we think are just for today, they may have consequences down the road. They may have consequences that we don't expect down the road. And the man that we're studying today really personifies that for us. Lot is the character that we run into again as we come to Genesis chapter 19. And in Genesis chapter 19, a relatively familiar story of Sodom and Gomorrah is there. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah is well known because of several factors. One, the two angels come in to Sodom, and Lot offers them a place in his house to stay for the night. While they're there, the men of the city surround the house and they demand that these two men be given up so that they can have a physical relationship with them. And that's where the word sodomy actually comes from. Sodom was a corrupt place beyond imagination. It was a place that was infiltrated by sin, and that was what it was known for, and it had that kind of an atmosphere all the time. When these two angels were in the house, Lot offers his two daughters to the crowd. And the end result is that the two angels that are there in the house strike the men with a blindness of sorts, and it was an inability to find their way. And the crowd eventually dispersed. And through that that long night, I'm sure Lot goes out and tries to tell his sons-in-law that God is going to destroy the city. They laugh at him. And there are people who think that Lot may have been speaking as in such a manner that they thought he was drunk. And what an awful testimony for this man. It doesn't say that. It clearly says they laughed at him when he tried to tell them that God was going to destroy the city. As morning light approached, the angels literally dragged these people out of the city. They told them not to turn back. And apparently Lot's wife turned back, and it says that she became a pillar of salt. It's a story that's even referenced in the New Testament, that as Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt, she's used as an illustration. When they got out of the city, the Lord let them go to a place called Zoar. And it's a city, the name literally means small or tiny. It was a tiny city. But they fled up into the mountains. And in the mountains, his two daughters decided that there were no men left, that God had destroyed everyone. They made their father drink until he was drunk on two successive nights and then lay with their father. They fathered Moab and Ammon after those two sons came countries that were named. And those two nations were nations that were constantly at odds with the Israelite people. They are the enemies of the Israelites. Now here is Lot, whom, if we study from the beginning, ends up with a sordid reputation. This man fathers children through incestuous relationships that he doesn't even realize he's involved in because they got him drunk. He is a man who lost his family to Sodom. He is a man whose reputation is forever scarred. In the pages of history, he is known for nothing other than one word that we can look at him and say that the Bible in the New Testament says he was a righteous man. I want you to look at that with me here in 2 Peter chapter 2. When Peter is speaking, he is a very practical man. Back in the end of the fifth chapter in chapter 1, he says, "You can cast all your cares upon the Lord, for He cares for you." And then he comes to the New Testament. And when he comes to the New Testament, he begins to very practically talk about things. And as he talks about things, he brings Lot up. And he says, "I want to use Lot as an illustration for you." And let's go to chapter 2, verse 6. And it says, "And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly." All right, so from that verse, Peter says, "I want you to remember Sodom and Gomorrah as an example of what God does to those who are ungodly people." But then in verse 7, he speaks specifically of Lot. He says, "And delivered or rescued righteous or just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked." That word vexed is the idea of oppressed with the sensual conversation of the wicked, the sensual conduct of these people. An interesting comment by Peter, because he looks back at this Old Testament story, and apart from his input, I would have looked at Lot and said, "This man cannot be a believer. This man has abandoned everything that he was taught by Uncle Abraham." But when Peter recounts the story, he specifically will two times say that this righteous man, and he's indicating by that, here is a man who believed in God. Here's a man who had a trust in God. And he said that God delivered or rescued this man who had oppressed himself with the filthy conversation, the sensual conduct of ungodly people. He had oppressed himself by being involved in that. Go on to verse 8. "For that righteous man, dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing through sight and sound, tormented his righteous soul." That's the idea of vexed. He tormented his righteous soul from day to day with their lawless deeds. The Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. Now here is the focus that we have this morning, not on exactly what Peter is teaching in this passage, the fact that he's using it as an illustration, he gives us some information that is very helpful in looking at the story of Lot. With that in mind, I'd like you to turn back to Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19 is where we come back to the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, and in the context, if you'll remember back to chapter 18, three men have stopped in Abraham's tent, and the first part of that chapter, in chapter 18, they assure Sarah that she's going to have a child. She laughs about that, and then these men leave. And when they leave, Abraham walks a short distance with them, and when they stop, probably a mile or two from his tent, the two men go on, and we'll learn that those are the two angels of chapter 19. They're going on to Sodom and Gomorrah, and the one man who is the angel of the Lord stays and talks with Abraham. And if you remember the story, this is what we looked at last Sunday morning. As Abraham talks with this angel of the Lord, talks with God, he begins to plead with this angel. He said, now God, if there are 50 righteous men in the city, would you spare it? And he is interceding for his nephew Lot. He said, if there are 50 righteous men in the city, you wouldn't destroy the just with the unjust, would you? And the Lord says, you know what? I won't. If there are 50 men there, and he keeps bringing him down. He says, what about 45 men? What about 40? What about 30? What about 20? What about 10? And he comes all the way down. He says, if there are 10 righteous men in the city, I tell you what, I won't destroy it. If we get to Sodom and there are 10 righteous people in that city, I will not burn that thing with fire and brimstone. I'll let it stand. Now, we don't know for sure, but there are a lot of people who think that Abraham might have been reasoning this way. There was Lot and his wife. That would be two men, two people. Then Lot had two daughters that were still in the house. That's four. From the context of it, there's a little question about whether they were actually married already or not. I believe they actually had already gotten married when you study it out. But he had two sons-in-law, at least two sons-in-law that he went to visit during the night. So that's six people. And then the two daughters that were married to them, that would be eight. If they had any grandchildren, that would easily take it to 10 people. And most people would look at it and say, probably Lot, or Abraham was assuming that Lot would at least have won his own family and perhaps a few others to the Lord, and they would be trusting in God, and these are righteous people who are by faith believing the promises of God. And when Abraham talked him down to 10 people, he's probably considering just Lot's family, and at least Lot could be rescued that way. The truth is, when God went there, he only found one righteous man, and that was Lot. And God, in his mercy, rescued him. When we come to chapter 19, after Abraham has interceded for him and the prayer has gone up and God has said, if there are 10 men, then I will let it go. Then in chapter 19, we come to the story of Lot. Now, I don't want to focus on the entire chapter today. I want you to simply think about Lot with me. Let's look at chapter 19, verse 1, because that's where we'll start this. And there came two angels. These are the two men that were walking along the road. There came two angels to Sodom at evening. And Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them. And he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. Now, of the things that we'll learn in this chapter, there is a huge piece of information in that verse about Lot himself. And if you like to make notes in your Bible, perhaps underline a little bit, right in the middle of that verse it says that they came to Sodom at evening and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. We have a little bit of a history of Lot as we go through from chapter 13 all the way through to this chapter. I want you to back up with me, if you would, and look at that. Go back to chapter 13 and let's see how he got there. We find Lot is kind of an interesting character when we begin to profile him and think, what is this man like? Before we read that, let me mention a couple of other things to tell you where we're going with this so that you get a skeleton in your mind that you can build some meat on today. Lot grew up in Abraham's house. He would have been called Abram then, but he was in Abraham's house. As far as we can tell, this was a pretty good family situation. Abraham's brother would have died, and so Lot would be his nephew. And at some point, probably while he was still fairly young, Abram took Lot into his home and really treated him as a son. And he gave him a great home. He traveled with them and was there with him. And because of God's blessing upon Abraham, Lot also was blessed with tremendous things. And a childless uncle and a fatherless nephew probably had a natural bond. Abraham wanted children, and they didn't have any, and so this naturally filled that void. And we would assume that he poured himself into this young man. And as he grew up in Abraham's house, under Abraham's influence and with Abraham's spiritual direction, how is it that this young man ended up in Sodom fathering two nations that hated God's people? How did he go from being in a godly home to being in a godless place and doing godless things? Well, that's a frustrating question, because many parents struggle with that. I preached on Lot about 4 years ago, and we talked a little bit about this then, that it is a very frustrating thing sometimes for parents to pour themselves into a child, and then that child fails the spiritual test in life, because they've decided that they're going to go and do things their own way, and they're going to ignore everything that they've been taught. And there are parents even here that are heartbroken because of what their children are doing or have done. That is extremely difficult. I would imagine that Abraham was no different in this. Although it was not his natural son, he had poured himself into this young man. And he had tried to teach him that God was a holy God and that God needed to have first place in his life. And Abraham exhibited that in his own life. He demonstrated, oh, Abraham's not sinless by any means. But he has demonstrated a faith in God, and it says his faith was counted to him as righteousness. He believed God. And Lot was raised in that environment with that kind of a setting before him. And so as he ends up in this awful situation in the end, we have to ask the question, what contributed to Lot's failure? Why is it that Lot failed? Our answer is not going to be that Abraham messed up. Now, as any parent would acknowledge, you'll make mistakes. Abraham went down into Egypt once and lied. Abraham made some errors. But that isn't the problem. Every human being, every parent is going to make some decisions that are going to be, if you went back and did it again, you would do it differently. And the fact is that no young person can look at mom and dad and say, I am not spiritual because of you. You overcome that. And so the problem is not Abraham. What is the problem then? How do people get to the point where their life falls apart? And you know, I've seen this. That there are some when they're young and they take a bride and they begin to have children. And you can just watch as the family begins to disintegrate piece by piece. And I've unfortunately seen that even inside our church, as you watch young families and marriages, and you can just see that there are seeds of destruction that have been planted there, and they're growing and growing and growing, and it's going to come to a day when, bang, it just flies apart. And that's what happened with Lot. He was going along, and in his mind, I think he thought things were going fairly well. He was still wealthy. He had a seat at the gate. He was doing all the things that he wanted to do. But then all of a sudden, these two angels show up. And God is going to destroy everything. He's going to burn it up with fire. Life came apart at the seams for him. And life came apart at the seams for him because he had sowed seeds of fleshly living that were now grown, full grown, and they were going to blossom in his life. And what we need to do is go back and look at those seeds and determine that we're not going to plant those same seeds so that our life someday just flies apart. Because while you may be sitting here today and things seem to be going okay, it is very possible if you allow these things to grow in your life that you're going to see that life does not work the way that you think it's going to work. It is going to come apart for you. And so if we can find those things and root them out, here's the blessing that we have of studying Scripture. We can avoid some of the things that are going to happen to us down the road. And what God reveals in the failures of Lot is a faulty foundation. And we can look at this story and we can ask a couple of why questions. And those why questions will allow us to evaluate our own lives so that we come to a place where we say, I don't want to do that. So what are the why questions that we're going to ask? What are the why things that we put down and say, why did he do this or how did he do this? So let's ask the first question, how did Lot end up in Sodom? How does a guy who was raised in a godly home with a man who does trust God, he believed God, it was counted to him for righteousness, he is following God's plan, he is trusting in God, he meets with God, how does that young man go from being in that home to living in Sodom? Well, I have you in Genesis chapter 13. In Genesis 13, let's look at verse 10. And let's read verse 9 to put it in the context. Abraham and Lot have strife between the herdsmen because their flocks are too large, and so they need to separate. And in verse 9, Abraham looks at Lot and he said, "Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, or please separate from me, I pray thee. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." What a gracious offer. This tells us more about Abraham and more about the home that he's growing up in than maybe anything else that happens. Abraham is the elder here. Abraham is the reason for God's blessing. Abraham is the one that is in charge. And when it comes to their strife between the herdsmen, Abraham looks at his younger nephew and he says, "Listen, I want to initiate this. I don't want the strife." Boy, what a man. He is confronting the problems in his family. And then he says, "Here's what we're going to do, Lot. We're going to separate. You're going to go one way, and I'm going to go the other way. Look out here, and we've got the whole land before us. And I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to take the good land right over there, and I'm going to live in that." That's not what Abraham did. Abraham, in graciousness, looked at his nephew, and he said, "Here's what we'd like to do. You look out here, and if you want to go to this side, I'll go to this side. If you want to go this way, I'll go this way. If you want to go this way, I'll go this way. I am willing to take the back seat. I am literally willing to look at you and say, you take first choice in this, and I'll go the opposite direction." What a man. What a thoughtful, pleasant man to live with. And he had poured himself into Lot. And here's what Lot did. Verse 10. We begin to learn about Lot. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, the garden of Eden, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest to Zoar. And Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. And Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom, or he moved his tents as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. That means beyond what was normal. Now here is what we first learn about Lot. That he does not take into consideration the danger that he's putting himself or his family in. You know, there are a lot of people who have unusual family situations. In our ministry as a whole and in our academy, we have dealt with a lot of unusual family situations. There are some of you that have grown up in unusual family situations. It is really not the norm now to have marriages that actually last more than 10, 12, 15 years. You know, I learned something last week. I went to get a card. Now Christy's not here. I cheat on the card thing, men. I do this. I keep cards in my office in case I forget. And so I have a file in there, and it has some Valentine cards in it. I'll sell them to you at a real high price if you're on your way home and you realize you forgot one. But I have cards in there. I have Valentine's Day. I have every card in there. I even have generic cards in there that can become whatever I want them to be. But I thought, you know, and we had this agreement. We'll make cards for each other because I like Rand Hummel. He preaches at the Wilds. He and his wife have this down. And if you ever go, he'll tell you about it. They go into Walmart and they carefully select a card. And then they meet in the next aisle and show each other the card and then go put it back. I like my mom and dad's theory as well. My dad ran onto this accidentally. He got my mom an anniversary card, I believe, anniversary or birthday, I forget which it was, but the next year he forgot to get her a card, but he knew where last year's was. And so he got it out and gave it to her, and she oohed and awed. And then a couple of days later, his conscience was bothering him, and he confessed. But now they just get the card out and sign it every year and date it. A lot cheaper. I'm really into that. But I thought, since this was my 25th anniversary, I should go and get a card, and not just a card, but when you care enough to send the very best, Hallmark. And there were two reasons for that. I was already in the store buying perfume, and Hallmark was next door, so it was convenient. And I thought, I really should get a 25th anniversary card. So I went in to look at 25th anniversary cards. Do you know how many there were? One. Made my selection very quick. I walked into the store, and this girl said hi, and I asked her where the anniversary cards were, and she took me back and showed me, and I looked at them, and about a minute later I walked up. She said, that was fast. I said, well, there's only one choice. It was a nice card. But there was only one. And you know, when we were looking for 50th anniversary cards, we learned the same thing. There's not a big section for 50th anniversary cards. Many people come from struggling family situations. You come from unique families. You can never use a unique family situation to excuse sinful decisions. You know, I don't know what your family was like. There are some whose parents stayed together, but they were emotionally divorced. They weren't divorced because during that time it was not good to get divorced. There were some whose family fought all the time. There were others that may have been involved in abuse within the family. There are others who went through divorce and stepmoms and stepdads. There are some whose parents died. And you ended up being an orphan. You ended up being in foster homes. Whatever the family situation that you find yourself in, you cannot use that as an excuse to make poor spiritual decisions. You've got to even be more diligent to make wise spiritual choices if you find yourself in that kind of a position. So here's this fatherless nephew of a childless uncle who is now given the opportunity to make a choice. And you know what he does? He makes a very selfish choice. He betrays right here the kind of thinking he has. I don't know if it comes from the fact that his father died. I don't know why he's like this. But it is unbelievable that when his uncle looks at him and says, Lot, you choose which way you're going to go. Now, maybe there was more to the conversation, but it sure doesn't indicate that. If my elderly uncle, who was responsible for my fortune, would have looked at me and said, you choose which way you want to go, and I'll go the other way, I would have certainly looked back at him and said, not a chance. Uncle Abram, you choose where you're going to go, and I'll go the other direction. You take the first choice. I am not going to do that. We at least need to discuss this. You know, the well-watered plains of Jordan, like the Garden of Eden, that is good, good land. There's nothing better. There's no question. How selfish of Lot to turn and look toward those and salivate and say, I'm going that way. I don't care about you. He's betraying his selfishness as he makes that choice. He's also betraying the fact that he is naive, because he's not taking into consideration what comes with the well-watered plain of Jordan. How did he get there? Well, he came to a place where selfishly he made some choices that didn't look toward the future. It says in this passage in the King James, it's a neat way to word it, he pitched his tent toward Sodom. That means that he moved over here and he brought his tents as close to Sodom as he could. And he lived on the outskirts of it, and he enjoyed the area. And there comes a point where you're around it and you start to get involved in it. Turn over just one chapter, if you would, to chapter 14. And in chapter 14, we went through this as well. Five kings battle four kings, and you have this whole war that takes place. And the end result is that in verse 12 of chapter 14, it says, and they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, and notice that next phrase. If you like to underline, here's the second thing that you'd underline. Who dwelt in Sodom and his goods and departed. How did he get from dwelling outside of Solomon, where his tent was pitched toward it, to dwelling in Sodom? I don't know. It doesn't tell us. We don't know how long it was. It was probably several years, but he had made this transition very slowly, but very surely. He had gone from being on the outskirts of Sodom to now being in Sodom. And when you go all the way over to chapter 19, where we were just a moment ago, then that other phrase that I told you to underline in there as well, there came two angels to Sodom at evening, and Lot sat in the gate at Sodom. Now, sitting in the gate, you would look at it, and in our time we'd go, well, what does that mean, sitting in the gate? Well, you know, in the ancient times, which covers a lot of territory, you didn't have aerial assaults. And so you didn't worry about airplanes. A city was defined, really, by its walls. And so the walls being higher and thicker, you could withstand an army. And if you had a ground assault, obviously a wall is really a deterrent. That's what kept you safe. And you find that all the way through the Old Testament and even into the New Testament, the wall was very important. And in a wall, you would have the gates. And you had different size gates. You had the main gates that would be huge, and you would have then some side gates you would come in. But normally, they would close those gates at night. But the main gate of the city was not just the place that everybody came and went. It was also the place where all of the business of the city took place. And so the elders of the city would come, and it was just a place of fellowship and a place where they'd get together and kind of like sitting at McDonald's drinking your coffee. But it was a place to sit around and talk, but all of the business took place at the gate. And Lot was very comfortable there. He had a seat at the gate. He was involved in what was going on in that city. He had gone from a place where he was living in Uncle Abram's house, and he was watching God do some tremendous things, and he was watching God bless and his flocks and herds grow, and he was hearing about God, to where Abram had given him a choice, and he had made a selfish choice, and now he's pitched his tent towards Sodom, where he can look over there and say, wow, they look like they're having fun in there. Wow. Oh, some sin, boy. Wouldn't want to be in that. But then, I don't know what happened. Maybe in the winter, there's a house for sale down there. I won't ever get involved in the stuff in Sodom, but let's just move into that house. And so he moves in. They get captured. Abram rescues him, and he moves right back into the house. And then he gets involved. As he's there, he starts learning the people and the business that's going on, and finds out it can be profitable to be involved in things like that. And so he sits in the gate. How did he get there? Well, he got there gradually. But he got there because he made selfish choices. And there would be people who would try to live with that philosophy. We need to live with them so we can win them, you know? Well, listen, I'll tell you, he moved in with them. He became like them, but he didn't win them. He lost far more than he ever gained. The New Testament tells us that he tormented his righteous soul with their lawless deeds, with their sinfulness, their wretchedness. He tormented himself when he got right in the middle of that. And what that teaches us is that we have to ask, how did he get to the place where he was in Sodom? He didn't put the barriers up. He acted selfishly. He didn't act with wisdom at all. How did he get there? Well, it was a gradual move that he made. And it was out of selfishness. Let's ask a second question as well. Not only how did Lot get to Sodom, but why did Lot move into Sodom? Now, this is a little bit of speculation, but we're going to be able to draw from some things that we know about Lot over the course of chapters 11 all the way through chapter 19. And some of this is going to be clear. Some of it is going to be things that we know from the New Testament, some just that we know from watching people. And I have five things that I want to give you here, and we don't have time to expound on a lot of them, but I think they'll spur your thinking as you look at them. So why did Lot move into Sodom? Number one, he moved into Sodom because his focus was on the wrong things. His focus was on material things rather than spiritual things. You know, he wanted to ensure his financial success at the expense of spiritual success. When he was given that choice about which direction to move, it doesn't ever record that he looked toward heaven and said, God, where do you want me to go? Where do you want me to move? What do you want me to do? I always love when somebody moves here and their first thought is not to come and find the ideal house. Well, we've had several people do this. A couple of you are here. But they come first and they look at the city and say, where is the church that I'm going to attend? Maybe God is moving me here because of a job, but where is the church that I'm going to attend? And now my house needs to be within 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever, of that church. That's my first choice. Here's a person who's thinking spiritually. Here's a person who is weighing out the spiritual consequences of their decision. You know, there's no indication Lot did anything like that. Lot looked over and said, life will be best right there because of material things. And I don't know if Abraham may have said, now, Lot, you know, Sodom's over there. Ah, yeah, well, whatever. But he was making his decisions based upon the wrong things. He would be saying things like, I'm going to give my family what I never had. Now, I'm going to take care of my family financially. He fell prey to believing that things were the most important contribution he had to his give to his family. I need to give my family things, cars, houses, clothes. Those things mean nothing if you lose your children spiritually. Do you realize that? Do you realize that if you don't provide for your family spiritually and you give them all the wealth in the world, they die as poor as you can possibly be? Yet here in this room, there will be people who will be tempted to sacrifice spiritual things in order to provide for your children physically, materially. And Lot fell prey to that thinking. I'm going to give to my family. I'm going to give them things that I never had. I had a rough life at the start. I deserve some good things. They deserve some good things. Let them have a little fun. His focus was on the wrong things. It's not about all the toys that you can collect in life. It's not about how many sheep and goats you have. It's not about those things. You've got to get over that in your life. You may have to sacrifice some material things to be as spiritual as you want to be. And the worst thing will be if God takes them from you so that you can see Him. But what a blessing if you can look at it and say, I'll be a good steward of what God gives me, and if I never have whatever, then I'm going to be right with God. But I'm going to serve Him. And I'm not going to make decisions based upon material things. Here's number two and why he moved to Sodom. He thought he could handle it. You know, there's no question that there's some naivety or there's some arrogance, one. But he thought, it won't affect me. I can handle this. And how many times have I seen somebody who would get involved in things and say in their mind, you know, this won't affect me. I'll never get involved in this kind of an environment. I'll never get involved in the drinking. I'll never get involved in the drugs. I won't start missing church. I know I'm going to do it once, but I won't start missing church. I won't start making poor decisions. I can handle it. Yeah, but what about all those people who couldn't? In arrogance, I'm better than all of them. I can watch these things and it won't affect me. I can listen to this music and it won't affect me. Listen, there's either a real naive person or a real arrogant person who thinks they can handle it when it destroys other people. Number three, he didn't realize the gradual progression of sinful choices. You know, sometimes people are a little bent out of shape when Pastor Shank or I will confront them and say, you know, that's a bad choice, because we're looking at it and it's just a small step. It's a little thing. It might be something to do with, you know, your choice of missing a church service, or your choice of playing a sport on a sports team, or it might be some kind of music you're listening to, or something you're wearing, whatever it might be. And people are like, oh, I want to rule my life, and they're just all bent out of shape. You know why that is? Because sin is a gradual progression. Just like walking with the Lord. When you are growing in the Lord, you know it uses this illustration that says walk with the Lord. You know what walking is? It's taking step after step. You don't have to walk very fast. You can take little steps. And it doesn't take very long to move. I just moved about 6 feet taking very small steps. But you know the same thing is true the other way. You're spiritually here. You used to come Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday. You used to read your Bible. You used to pray. But you started missing a service here and there. And then, that reading through the Bible here, that takes a lot of time. I think I'll just read a verse every day or two. And then I want my kids to be involved in sports, so we really can't come on Thursday night to grow and can't come some Wednesday nights. But it's okay. I can handle it. And I can make this decision, watch a few, movies, they're not that bad, and we can watch those. And I'm pretty stiff on that music back there, and I just moved that 6 feet backwards. And I did it because of small steps. And God has given us a picturesque illustration of Sodom going from pitching his tent toward Sodom, making the choice, first of all, to go there, and then pitching his tent, and then moving in, and then sitting at the gates, and then being destroyed with them, losing everything he had. You know what else? It goes hand in hand with this. I'll put this down as number four. He didn't realize how patient Satan is. Well, God is patient. I'm thankful for that. We should be taking this step and growing spiritually, and being a church and doing what we should do. And we kind of make those steps and, I don't want to take that step. I don't want to do that today. And the Lord is very patient. Oh, He may come down and He may, whack you or nudge you along a little bit, and you take that little step. Okay, oh boy, that was a good decision. You take a step, and then you take one back, and the Lord's very patient with you. And He'll get you here. He'll work with you. And He may do whatever He needs to as a dad to move you along. But the same thing is true in the opposite direction. Satan gets you to take one step. Oh, but I shouldn't have made that, and so you take a half step back. All right, I'm back at church. All right, I'm going to miss another two or three church services, and you take this step, and, I shouldn't do that. I'll send a bigger tithe this week. And He's very patient. As you take a few more steps this way, and then you realize from your training, oops, shouldn't have done that, and you move back. And Satan is patient like God is. Now, Satan is not God. He's not omniscient. He doesn't know everything. But he is fine. If over the course of 30 years you make the choice to move in this direction, and then it takes you 5 years to move right outside the gates of Sodom, and you live there for 5 years. He doesn't care, as long as you're moving in the direction He wants you to go. And then finally, you use whatever excuse and you move into Sodom. And then you use whatever excuse and you move to the gates and get involved. And it might be, well, I got to win those people. You know, I'm living with them. I got to teach them who the Lord is, so I got to be involved with them. You shouldn't be there to begin with. That's the problem. And Satan is very patient as you come to the place where you have made the wrong decisions. And then the last thing I'll put down is that I believe we have to say that he did not have a healthy fear of sin. He did not have a healthy fear of sin. We have the advantage of moving to the New Testament and reading Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Solomon wrote in the end of Ecclesiastes, what's the whole duty of man? The whole duty of man is to fear God and keep His commandments. He did not have a fear of sin. So you're supposed to be afraid of sin? I'm not afraid of sin in the sense that it's going to attack me. I'm afraid of sin in the sense that I'm going to come close to it, and I'm going to get involved in it. Because it wraps me up. You know that the Bible describes sin as cords or ropes in Proverbs? It describes it as something that literally wraps itself around you like ropes and you can't move. You can't do anything. It's something that you begin to get involved in pornography and it wraps itself around you. You can't pray. You can't go to church and really get anything from it. And it keeps wrapping itself around you, and you can't really enjoy your marriage because you have idealistic views that are unrealistic. And you're wrapped up in your sin. You let bitterness start wrapping itself around you. You can't enjoy the church service. You can't enjoy the people you're sitting here with. And it wraps itself around you. Wraps you up. You get involved in the music or the movies or the lifestyle or the material things. You pick what you want. But most people do not have a fear of sin. And as Lot looked towards Sodom, And he saw that city that God describes as exceedingly sinful and wicked. He didn't have a fear of sin. If you would have asked him on that day when he made that choice, Lot, are you ever going to move into Sodom? Let your daughters marry Sodomites? You've got to be kidding. I would never live in that city. That place is wicked. It's awful. I just want the material things around. I just want the well-watered plains up there. I just want my sheep to flourish. I want my cattle to flourish. But I'm not going to get involved in that. And you see, he didn't have the healthy fear of sin that should have kept him from making some of those baby steps toward Sodom. And here in this room, there will be people that are just like that. You don't have that healthy fear of sin that keeps you from making choices that are moving you towards Sodom. There ought to be things that would keep you from going there. I look down the road and say, I just don't want to go that direction. And we're waiting until we get to the edge of Sodom and saying, oh, we got a problem. When was the problem? Chapter 13, when he made his choice to go that direction. And most people would want us as believers, as Bible-believing and teaching Christians, to leave them alone until they're on the border of Sodom and then jump in. He made his decision back in chapter 13 when he pitched his tent towards Sodom. That's where the problem was. He didn't have a healthy fear of what he was getting himself into, and the result was that eventually he fell into it headlong, and was wrapped up in it, and it destroyed him. You know that when he was done, his name is awful. We think of him not in a good sense, but in an awful sense. The only thing good we can say about him is he was a righteous man. He was a man, if we were describing it today, he was a man who has trusted Jesus Christ as his Savior. That's the only good thing we can say about him. Other than that, he made awful choices. He was so caught up in the worldliness of the world that he let it destroy him. But it all goes back to chapter 13. Now, there are two questions that I've asked it. How did Lot get to Sodom? Well, he did it gradually. He did it because he was thinking selfishly. He did it because he was thinking naively. How did he get there? He got there because he never looked toward God and said, God, I want to know exactly the steps you want me to take. Is this the direction you want me to go? Number two, I ask you, why did Lot move into Sodom? Well, Lot moved into Sodom because his focus was on the wrong things. His focus was not on pleasing God and living for God. His focus was on providing things for himself and for his family. His focus was not on spiritual progression. He was not concerned about his spiritual life as much as he was about his material life. And when we get to that place, we'll start making poor choices. I'm going to ask you a third question about this in another sermon. But I want you to think on these two today. How did he get to Sodom? Selfish thinking. Why did he move to Sodom? Materialistic thinking. Are you like that? Are there people here today who are making little decisions, and those little decisions are moving you further away from God rather than closer to God? And you see, it's not that I'm looking at you and saying, I see a bunch of wicked, awful Sodomites sitting out here. That isn't the problem. The problem is that I do see sometimes people taking baby steps away from God. And you naively believe that those little baby steps, no big problem there, is there? No big problem there. No big problem there until you stand back and look and realize you just moved 6 feet by taking baby steps. And it's those baby steps we have to stop. If we're going to grow spiritually, you've got to turn around and walk with the Lord. As you evaluate your life this morning, which way are you going? Are you taking the baby steps, almost imperceptible, that lead you towards Sodom? And you would look at me today and say, I'll never be in Sodom. Neither would Lot. But he was. And if you don't stop those baby steps, you'll face that same decision. Someday you'll have to decide, do we rent that house in Sodom? Do I sit at the gate? You've got to stop those steps. You're moving in the wrong direction. Let's bow for prayer, please. And with our heads bowed and out of courtesy for those who are here, if you'll not look at me and not look at others for a moment, I'm going to ask you, as you consider your life and your relationship with God, is the Lord dealing with you about some things that you need to change? Perhaps as you look at your life in a broad spectrum, you can see that you've made some poor decisions. The Lord wants you to make decisions that are going to move you closer to Him. In just a moment, we're going to play through a stanza of the song, "Is Your All on the Altar of Sacrifice Laid?" And as we do that, I give you an invitation. Perhaps today you need to come to this altar and you need to get before the Lord and say, "Forgive me." Perhaps this morning you need to talk with somebody. Dave DeHaven will be in the back of the auditorium. I'll be here at the front. If you need to talk with somebody, please do that. But I'm going to ask every person in here to pray and talk to the Lord and say, "Lord, here's what You've revealed to me today, and here's how I'm going to respond to it. I don't want you in Sodom, but the only way to stop that is to help you see the baby steps that lead there. And if you're willing to let God show you those things, you can move in the direction that God wants you to move." Would you stand with me, please? The song that we'll play asks, "If our all is on the altar of sacrifice laid." Lord, I pray that You'll allow us to see as You see. Lord, in our human way of thinking, we can deceive ourselves. But I pray this morning You'll help us to see clearly. Lord, if there's one here that's never trusted Christ as Savior, would You convict them and bring them to a place of understanding? And Lord, I pray as well that as we leave here, You'll help us to make wise choices for You. With our heads bowed, as Nancy plays through a stanza of this song, if God is dealing with you and you need to come to this altar and pray, please do that. If you need help in any ways, please step out. But I'm going to ask each of you to pray and say, "Lord, here's what You've taught me, and here's how I'm going to respond." Thank you. You can look this way if you would, please. As always, when we finish here, if we can help you in any way, please let us know. We'd love to help you if we can. We're going to be dismissed in prayer, and don't forget we have the service tonight at 6 o'clock. Choir practice tonight. Did he already announce what we're going to do with that? All right, 5:30 tonight is choir.